Live from the heart of the universe, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, we'll championship coach, author, and transformational speaker, Mickey St. Germain.
Look at the night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Laura Chang. I am Mark Lejeune, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am excited about tonight's show, and interestingly enough, I had a client 2 weeks ago talk to me about something very important in her life, and a client a week ago talked to me about something very important in her life, both unrelated to each other, but both very related in many ways and very related to tonight's show. So the first one was sharing something earth-shattering, very life-changing, major, like one of the most major things that she's ever brought to a session with me. And it was about her personal life. The second one, again, one of the most major things she has brought to a session with me about her business life. And interestingly enough, both of them were surprised that I wasn't surprised. And I said to both of them, each of them, that I had been expecting this conversation, but it obviously wasn't time. And that I expected that neither one of them wanted to speak with me about it because, especially being their life coach, when they brought it in, it would mean it was real and they had to face it. And they knew that once they faced it with me, ironically, I might be the only one in their life that recognized that place where they were, even though they all have significant others, both of them, and business people and friends and family. Actually, that's potentially part of the problem. So let me share it this way, that in the first client's life, everything in her personal life with her family and friends and all of that, when they see her doing what she's been doing, they reward her and they tell her how great she is and how good a person she is and all of that. When she came to her own decision within herself that she wanted to up-level herself or be a different version or the next level version of herself, she started sharing with her friends and family, they started turning against her. And so they removed the rewards, they removed the accolades. Same with the second client, who in business has had much success, many actual awards and rewards. Financially, the business has grown. When she decided that business-wise, she needed to make a decision that didn't work for her business associates, didn't even work for the industry as far as the industry is concerned, then they started a backlash. And it's those moments that come to mind when I read a quote from our guest, Coach Mickey St. Germain, who says, "The most courageous thing you can do is be yourself." And so each of these clients in their own ways have to face that moment. The thing is, though, that those moments are big in their life. But I know these clients have both experienced other big moments, similar moments in their life, where in a sense, they stand alone. They have to be courageous and they have to be themselves the best they know how, whatever that means to them. And that those moments where they feel like they're taking a big step forward and then almost everything around them seems to come crashing down, especially their support. And there aren't rewards for that. And there isn't an A on the report card. There isn't a graduation march for somebody who does that. There isn't a gold medal or silver or even a bronze. It's a quiet moment. And so many people, outwardly successful or not, not only face this in their life, a lot of us face it over and over again. And so I love the other quote that I got from our guest, Mickey St. Germain. She says, "I believe that everyone deserves a comeback story. That belief comes from my own," she says, "of starting over, pushing through challenges, and proving that it's never too late to win your game." I like your game in there. And I might also add to that, over and over again, because the game isn't done until the game is done, in a sense. So for who is this show for? This show is definitely for those clients. This show is definitely for everyone who finds themselves in this position over and over again. In fact, I'm going to quote again from our guest, this time directly from her book, Mickey St. Germain, in her book, Fourth and One, where she says, her book, and I say this show is for the ones who were counted out but showed up anyway. Those who are different and refuse to conform just to fit in. The leaders who rise even when no one is watching. And to every underdog who has ever been told you can't, this episode is for you.
Are you being yourself today?
I am, as much as I know how. Thank you for asking. I am, as much as I know how.
Well, I guess that's where I'm going with it, as much as you know how, or not much as we know how, because always reinventing?
Yeah. Yeah. Always being relevant, or always being present, I should say. Because that was the other thing that people say, well, what have you done lately? Or what's, you know, what are you going to do now? Or and we don't know people's story. We don't know how long they need to incubate something. We don't know what's in their heart or what's in their soul journey. So it's unfair to say, well, 30 years ago you did this and now you haven't done such and such. So, yeah
we spend most of our lives thinking we're being ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost so many identities that I don't know who myself is today any more than I did years ago. So it's a process.
And so the relevance of our show today and the episode, as we've titled it, inspired by our guest, How to Believe in Yourself, operative word here, again. This is episode 800, or I should say two operative words, again and again. So how to believe in yourself again and again and again, episode 883 of the Life Changes Show. We are delighted to have championship winning football coach, author, and transformational speaker, Mickey St. Germain. Welcome, Mickey, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure, and such a pleasure to finally have you on the show. Long ago, we were introduced by our mutual dear friend, David Allen Johnson. Thank you, David. And then thanks fairly recently to an event that, is it Global Society of Entrepreneurial Women or something like that?
Yeah, GSFE.
Yes. And thanks to Robbie Motter inviting me to participate in that event. I got to see you. So here we are connected. And oh my gosh, talk about believing in yourself again and again and again. We're going to get into your book in a moment. But I learned something about you that I never would have just guessed based on the conversations we've had, what I've learned about you and seeing you and all that. You started off in life in two very interesting things. One, you, how did you describe yourself actually, growing up as a kid?
Well, for me, I never took, I was a risk taker. You know, if you told me I couldn't do something, I'd say, watch me.
So that I would have guessed, actually. I would have thought that you came with that and you honed it. But you described yourself as the fat girl, as if like I was that. What was that?
So growing up, I had struggled with my weight. Matter of fact, my whole teenage life, you know, right up until I graduated high school and moved on out on my own to Florida. But yes, I was very heavy, was not athletic a lot of time, you know, didn't do a lot of things, was not invited. And it was difficult. You know how it is as a kid when you want to fit in and be part of something. And, you know, unfortunately, during that time frame, you know, you were judged based on that. And it struggles. It was a lot of struggles growing up.
So we'll get more into that. But alongside of that, your dad was a football player?
My dad was a football player in high school. But how we kind of collaborated with football was he became my new dad at age 7 for me. He became my stepdad. And the first time I ever had an opportunity to see football was with him on Sunday. And that's how we bonded. And that became our thing all the way up until recently, 3 years ago when he transitioned.
Wow. So it's interesting as you're describing this, I'm thinking here you were, you had not only this interest, this knowledge, and in so many ways, the know-how, but back then, not only because of maybe the confidence and how people treated people that were heavier, but you probably wouldn't have been allowed anywhere actually back then on a field, right?
Oh yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I fell in love with football at age 7 and I wanted to play. But back then, you know, women didn't have that opportunity. And so I just kind of went through life, but still so involved every Sunday. And you know, I knew the game inside and out. And I just loved it. Although I will tell you a funny story. My freshman year of high school, me and my girlfriend, Carrie, decided we changed our names and we went to try out for the football team. And when her and I showed up on the field, the head coach just wasn't having it. But, but we did try.
That is a funny story, and good for you. So what, how do you bridge all of that? And talk about how to believe in yourself. Did you ever believe you would be on that field?
You know, I've always loved the game. And when I had my son, and he was of age, he came to me and said he wanted to play football. And I was like, okay, you know, and of course, you know, I let my kids choose whatever they want to do. And he decided he wanted to play. And during that time frame, I had an opportunity to become a team mom because I wanted to be close. And I was always the first one to volunteer to do the chains or the down markers, just anything to get me close to the field. And then as the years progressed, we had coaches or we didn't have coaches. So I would say, I'll do it. I'll be the offensive coordinator. I'll do defense. Anything I could do to get on that field, I would do. And then I had an opportunity and I was very extremely grateful. And I want to give a shout out. Her name was Lisa Sherrier. She gave me the chance to be a head coach back in 2015. And that's when my football career really started to take off.
And then it all came together. I mean, obviously different things in different periods of your life, but your recognition of your understanding, not only of football, but also your whole bodybuilding career part of life, right?
Yeah, that too. I mean, strength and conditioning, that definitely plays a part in it. And then also, you know, just everything I've done, I would have to say, really has led me up to where I am. And I would have never thought that, Filippo, I would have never thought that when I was doing martial arts, that it would have flowed over into football. But that's because I'm a D-line coach, all my martial arts, and I'm a second degree black belt. So all my martial arts now I use on the field. And it's not just the techniques, it's also the self-belief and having these kids have self-identity and also believing in themselves and having courage to go out and do things. It all kind of came together. So I have to say everything that I have done, which I would never thought would have transpired, has led me to where I am today.
So courage, you said courage. Courage looks good on you. And how do you encourage the kids to have courage?
I deal with a lot of different personalities, and I love working with the kids because as a coach, and this is something I think we need to be more aware of as coaches, is that we have a huge responsibility when we work with kids because they're looking up to you for as a mentor. We don't know what's happening in their lives. We don't know where they've come from. We don't know what's transpiring. And you have to treat each one as an individual and get to know them and know who they are and know what's happening in their lives. Because something could be happening, and to lift a kid up and to teach them to believe in themselves and even more importantly, believe in them, that is what's going to roll over for them to have the courage to do what they think they can't do, whether it's on the field or off the field. And I think that's a very important element in anything we do in our lives, is that when you have someone who is cheering you on and believing in you, just that little tiny glimmer is enough to spark your own self-belief. And that's why I always say courage looks good on you, because it usually gives them the fuel to go out and do things that they didn't think they could do, or they never thought they could do, or they were afraid to do.
You know, actually, I like the phrase. There are several phrases, as you can tell, that I'm a radio fan of that you share. And we're going to talk about a couple more in a little bit. But I like the phrase because I'm getting a sense that people actually look different when they have courage and the confidence and not just the desire, but the feeling like they're going to be able to do something. And it doesn't even have to work out the way they think it's going to work out. But that process, that looks good. I mean, that feels good.
Yes. And you can see it. You can see the transition. I've seen people I've worked with where, you know, they're doubting or they're not sure or they're scared. You know, and we know how fear works. I'm sure we've covered that many, many times. And when you see someone all of a sudden change, and it could be just, again, that little spark or something that shows them that they are capable of doing it, their whole demeanor changes, their eyes light up, their body language changes. You can see that just that one little bit of belief can just ignite something so grand, and you can watch that transformation, and it's just extraordinary.
You know, I know personally and career-wise, you've had your major successes and your setbacks and then successes, and so it's a process, isn't it? And so part of what you do share in your coaching and with people is, if we have a process, it's easier to go through it the next time too, right?
Yes, I think so. And I always say there's, you know, I tell my guys on the field, there's winning and learning. There's never winning and losing. And I think anything in your life, if you learn from it, regardless of what it is, and you can take that information and use it to either do something different or change or understand something, that's huge in your life in any aspect.
So in this particular moment in life where life feels so big, I think maybe I've not been around forever, but it almost feels more than ever, in the sense that we have life happening in our hands on the phone, where we're watching things happen around the world that we may not like, or some of us like, but it some is tragic, some is hopeful, some is, and we feel like that's our game too, and we bring it in, and we have these moments where we could be totally crushed or elated, but then we have to deal with our own life and our own jobs or our own children or our own stuff happening everywhere all the time. So how do we like pick the game? Like, what's the game we're in, and do we shut the other off, or do we have to micro focus? How do you get people to like, let's start here or let's look at this?
Well, there's a lot of elements to that. And the first thing I want to share with you, and I always share this with people I speak with, or like I said, are on the field. Life doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. And whatever you decide to do with that is totally up to you. We all have a choice. And a lot of times we are bombarded and overwhelmed with so many things happening and so many things that are transpiring. And some feels like it's in our control. The other feels like it's out of our control. And one of the things that I think is very important is to realize, how are you responding to it? Because you have to pick and choose what is going to serve you in the way that's going to help bring you forward in your life. And what things do you have to release? You know, on the football field, I would say, hey, sometimes we have to cut things. You're going to have to cut, you know, things that are not working for you or serve you, and things that you don't maybe agree with, but you have to use. You know, take it in small doses and then decide, how do I find value in this? If there's no value in it, then you have to kind of reflect and say, can I use this in my life? And if you can't, then I would suggest go another direction, do something different. You know, take the things in, because life is so short and we have one shot at this. I think that whatever's happening, pick and choose the things that are going to help serve you, enlighten you, lift you up, make you happy, and move forward. And I know it sounds impossible, and it could start with just one small step. Maybe one thing that you know brings you down or is difficult for you to get through or by, try to dissect that and pick out the good things and then leave the rest.
Nice. One of the chapters is, or one of the pages I zeroed in on was dealing with the opposition. And my question to you is, what about when the opposition is your wife or husband or mom or dad or your best friend kind of thing?
So, and that's a tough one, however, because we are surrounded by those people on a regular basis. And I would have to say, first of all, understand that what's ever transpiring, a lot of times you have to look at that person first. Go really take a good look at that person. And what you have to realize, is it coming from a place of hurt? Is it coming from a place of anger? Is it, as you know, are their actions coming from something that is maybe out of your control? And then if it is something that is because of you or what you're thinking, then communication, open communication is the most important thing. You always have to look at what you're dealing with. And the most important thing is, what do you have control of over? What are things that are not out of, that are out of your control? And then, are you responding or are you reacting? Because if you're with a spouse or a loved one or a best friend and they know how to push your buttons, the best thing to do is you've got to step back, take a breath, and ask yourself, wait a minute, where is this coming from? And how am I going to respond to this? Because if you know, if you react to it and it's just going to escalate, and I would say communication and deciding to be able to take the conversation and make it something that's productive is always going to be more beneficial than just reacting and escalating it.
Great answer. You're doing great. You're good under pressure. And you say, in fact, you say pressure is a privilege. Speak on that, please.
Yes, and I've been under a lot of pressure many times in my life. And what I've learned, well, first of all, one of the most important things I've learned is I've learned to deal with things with laughter. Because I think when you let things eat at you or get to you, it's not beneficial. And you're going to look back in the long run and go, why was I thinking that 5 years ago? Or why did I feel that way? But I think to deal with pressure, the key element is step back and, again, take that deep breath and give yourself a moment to think. You don't always have to blurt out an answer. No one's expecting, well, they do, but when you step back and you don't respond and you give yourself a moment to think, that's when you can be in control of the situation. Because like we know, you could say something and you can't take back something you say. Once it's out there, it's out there. But if you give yourself an opportunity to step back and go, okay, how am I going to react to this? What's going to be the outcome about what I'm about to say? And am I going to be able to say the exact words that need to be heard to be able to be beneficial in this situation or this conversation?
Speaking of this conversation, we're having a conversation, at least these last minutes or so have been right out of the book, Fourth and One Mindset, Life's Playbook for Success by our guest, Coach Mickey St. Germain. Of course, the book is available where books are sold online, and we'll give more information a little bit later. But overcome setbacks, own your power, become unstoppable. So if you could talk about the fourth and one mindset for those who don't know the football analogy, please.
Sure. So fourth and one means in football, first of all, there's usually four downs. They get four tries. The offense, which is usually the team that has the ball, has four chances to get 10 yards or score a touchdown, whatever comes first. And a lot of times they'll play one down, a second down, a third down. Usually by the fourth time, if they don't get to that 10 yards, they have to turn the ball over to the other team. So a lot of times on a fourth and one, you get put in a situation where you just have to go for it. You can't think about it. You just got to go for it. And it could be throwing the ball completely down the field. It could be just running it, but you have to give it everything you've got, and you've got one chance of doing it. And I look at that in everything I think we do in life, is that a lot of times we hesitate and we hold back instead of just go for it and deal with the mistakes later, you know, deal with whatever the outcome is. But to have the courage to actually go for what you want and who you are and what you believe in and just do it, it's going to be the best thing you've ever done, because you're going to find that strength within you that you didn't know you had. And a lot of times when you go for a fourth and one and you just go for it and do it, you also find out who are the players on your team that are supporting you while you're doing it. And those are the ones that are going to cheer you on. Those are the ones that are going to lift you up. But they're also going to be the ones that, if it all goes haywire, they're also going to stand by your side and go and be your biggest cheerleaders to say, don't worry about it. Do it again.
I like it. And I hope as many people as possible have as many of those cheerleaders around them. I don't know this day and age, so many people are stuck in their own situation that it's hard for people to cheerlead somebody else. And it's not out of jealousy, or it's not, I mean, it could be, but it's like they are like, I feel like, and this is off the cuff, but I feel like we're all so much trying to survive that we don't take the time to just see what we're each doing, to recognize even those moments and say, hey, you know, you're good at this, or you did that, or good on you. Do you get that? Do you get the feeling for that, that that's what's happening?
I do. I think a lot of times we are so wrapped up in what's happening, or we're so conditioned to social media or being so far removed that we've kind of lost that human touch. But I always look at it this way. It starts with you. If you recognize that, and I recognize that, and somebody who's listening to this recognize that, hey, it's free. Say something nice to somebody. You have no idea how it's going to change their day. Even if it's somebody, your barista, and you go, hey, I really like your top, or I like your hair, or, you know, hey, you made a great cup of coffee today. Thank you. You really have no idea how one small little, and you know, act of kindness or something like that could make somebody's life different or make their day different, because you don't know, because we are like that. And I think if we have an opportunity to hear that and say something, and I invite each and every person that's listening to this, I'm going to challenge you tomorrow. Go, every time you go out, say something nice to one person, and maybe you'll start a chain reaction. Who the heck knows? But I think it's needed. I think we should do it. And I think it's something where if you start it and it does start something great and it makes a movement, how awesome is that?
How awesome is that? How awesome are you? You know, I loved this in the book. Understand that no decision is perfect. Yes. Say it. Tell us about that.
You know, we are all going to make decisions. I've even made decisions. I've made things that I'm like, oh no, I should have thought that one through. But what I have found is that sometimes it'll lead you to someplace else, maybe someplace you didn't expect. Sometimes we make a mistake or we do something and we think it's a dead end instead of a detour. And I really believe that you have to keep doing things over and over. And I think I use an analogy in the book. Is think about if you're taking a road trip, and I've driven across the country many, many times to help friends, and I've gotten a flat tire. I got a flat tire actually right in the middle of Arizona, and I had no idea where I was, and I thought about that, and that's really when it really came to me when I wrote this story. I was thinking, okay, this is something that happened. I didn't expect it. I didn't plan for it, but I was still on my journey to get across country. I was heading to New York. And I felt, okay, so I have to deal with this. I'm not just going to stop here and decide, well, get, you know, well, it didn't work out. I guess I'll just live in Arizona. But you plan. I mean, even though you're going to do something, I can guarantee something's always going to go haywire. That's just the way it is. But what you can do with that is understand that maybe it's a detour that's going to lead you somewhere else. Or maybe you can take that information and go, okay, well, that one didn't work. Let me see what else can happen. Let me see what if I do it this way. But the most important thing is never to give up. Never give up on your dream. Never give up on what you're doing. And if it takes you, if you do it 10 times and it doesn't work, then do it 10 more times because it'll compound and it will happen. It will work. You just can't give up. And that's what I meant by that is that you have to do the best you can. Don't worry about the plan didn't go expected because it is going to go haywire. Just decide what are you going to do with it when it does.
You know, I have seen so many great people do some great, amazing things, and I'm duly impressed and proud of them, and especially if they're my friends, I let them know and all that. But I have to say, I end up almost invariably being most impressed, and I look for these kinds of things and these kinds of people that have that inner strength. Where I've watched them do things like just before walking on stage or the day before or whatever, they're having like major life crisis. And the way they handled or the way they rose to those occasions to me was greater than in so many ways what they did on stage the next day. And so in your book, that's kind of what inspired also the monologue is that real strength isn't necessarily loud.
Yeah, I think it's internal. And I like how you put that because you're right. We never know what somebody is dealing with, and we go out and we do what we do. But that does take courage also. You know, whether it's someone who is dealing with something emotionally or physically, or even just something that's transpiring outside that they have no control over, but to stand up and still go forward, that is courage. And you're right, it's not loud. It's something that we deal with, and we just know that inside. And I think we forget that. I think a lot of times we don't see that because we don't think it's courage. We just think, oh, I have to go in here and do my job or put a smile on my face or get through this, even though all this other stuff is transpiring. But I think that is probably one of the most courageous things you can do because you have the strength to still go forward and do it. I really think that is probably one of the strongest strengths someone can have.
Well, you're right because you put it in the book, and I'm quoting you, and I agree with you. Relationships are built in the trenches. Good one. Good one.
Well, and that goes on and off the field. I have found, and just in my within my football career, that the tighter knit we are as a family, and the more adversity that we go through, the stronger we are. And I think now take it off the field. And again, like you said, you see these friends that have go through these things, but then go out with this courage and do what they need to do. But see, you're part of that fabric. You're part of that tapestry of them, Filippo, because they know that you're there right by their side. And maybe in some way, you're giving them a little bit of strength because you are there. And that's what I mean by relationships are built in the trenches because when we are going through something that we didn't expect or we didn't know or we have to deal with, and you just have someone there going, you know what, I got you. You know, I've got your back, and or I'm just here to listen, or I'm just here to be able to help you, or I believe in you. You've got this. Those are the most important things. Yes, things are nice when things are great, and you know, when everybody is there to support you and celebrate you. But I'll tell you what, I'd rather be surrounded by the ones that, okay, when I'm down on the ground and I'm in the trenches, they're the ones lifting me back up, going, you know what, you've got this, or vice versa. I want to be there with them. When you've heard that saying, you never look down on anyone unless you're giving them a hand up, you know, and that's, I always want to be that person. So I think when you see someone that's like that, give them that kind word, be there for them, lift them up.
Very nice. You know, we are, so many of us, myself included, so good at being able to look at, well, if I look like that, or if I did that, or if I was born over there, that so, but you say being built different makes extraordinary. Got to look at it differently, though, right?
I think it's different based on whether it's who you are or where you come from. I mean, I've seen a lot of kids come from environments that are not that great, and I've seen them just want it so bad and to move forward in their lives that they will do everything to do it. They don't allow their environment to dictate who they are. And I think I referred to also in my book, I actually had a gal who came out who wanted to be a kicker, and she worked so hard and she did everything she could. I mean, she was out there with those guys, she did what she did, and she was like, I'm going to do this. And I was so proud of her because she didn't allow who she was or, you know, and she was small. She was my height, and I'm like 5'1". And she just went out there and did her job, and she was able to go and kick a field goal and change. She broke the ceiling. We created history. Me being a special team coordinator and her being the first female kicker, and I was so proud of her because when you do things, even though you don't think you're built the way everybody else is, or you don't feel like you fit what everybody else does or fit the mold. You know, my thing is break the mold. You know, don't fit in, stand out. And you're going to give courage to somebody else who doesn't think they can do it because they're going to see you doing it and they're going to go, if she can do it, well, then maybe I could do this. Or maybe I could write that book, or I could join this or do whatever you wanted to do. It's never too late. If you have something that makes your heart sing, go out there and do it and break that mold because you don't have to be built a certain way to do stuff. I'm a 5 foot female doing D-line coach. I deal with guys that are 350 pounds. They don't scare me.
You might scare them though. My gosh, there are so many other things that we could talk about from your book, and the list goes on. I actually had so much more prepared, but it's in the book, Fourth and One: Life's Playbook for Success. Coach Mickey St. Germain. The book is available where books are sold. And Mickey, you've invited me a couple times, and this time it's finally going to happen to be a guest on your show. And I have to say, two things that I've already gotten from your show, and I haven't even been on it. But it's called Be Fearless, Be Flawed, Be You. That be flawed part, I found it very interesting. It's you're not saying like a crutch, you're saying this might be you, like use it.
I do. I think we're not perfect. We all have things, and even we look at stuff, and I think we concentrate on, oh, it's a flaw, it's a bad thing. No, it's not. It's your superpower because that's what makes you different. That's what makes you you. That's nobody else can do that. No one else can say things like you can say or do things like you. That is your superpower. So embrace it, and that's why I want people to realize that take whatever you've got and just realize that's who you are, and that is one amazing thing.
Well, I'm going to assume that you're inviting me to be on the Be Fearless, Be Flawed, Be You Coach Mickey and Friends podcast and not the Hail Mary in Heels podcast, right?
It's yes, yes. Yes, absolutely. You're on my Coach Mickey and Friends, and I'm excited to have you on. Like you said, we've been planning for years, and I'm just so thrilled, and I'm so honored and grateful that we had an opportunity to connect. And I want to thank you so much for inviting me here on your show, and I am so looking forward to having you on mine.
It's my pleasure. And I mentioned Hail Mary in Heels as a joke, but I did want to mention that. Are you still, tell us about that.
I have got a book coming out the end of March, and it is titled Hail Mary in Heels. And that is my stories to help empower women and realize that you can do anything. You and kind of give you the tools of how to refine your identity, how to move forward, how to understand that things that are presented to you are not because of who you are. It's because of how others have been conditioned. And that I'm even going all the way back through history on some of the story and some of the things I share. And then I share my own stories. But I'm really excited because it can really help anybody. But the most important thing is that throw your Hail Mary. And if you don't know what a Hail Mary is, it means going for it, not knowing what the outcome is going to go. And you never know if you're going to hit that touchdown to success. But, you know, if I can tell you anything, just go for it.
Championship winning football coach, author, and transformational speaker. She, of course, she speaks, she coaches, she does one-on-ones and groups and workshops. Find the book at 4th and 1 Mindset. That's the number 4. TH and the number 1 mindset.com. Find Coach Mickey and friends at Buzzsprout. We have links at the Life Changer Show page for that. And find Hail Mary in Heels right now on YouTube. We have a link for that as well at the Life Changer Show page for Coach Mickey St. Germain. And we look forward to the book. Do let us know so we can share. Mickey, what a pleasure. I can't wait till next time, whatever it is.
Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again.
Okay. Ciao, ciao. All the best. Boy, what a pleasure. I mean, it's on the one hand a hard subject because everybody's different. On the other hand, there are some things that seem obviously to work.
I wish she was coaching when I was playing ball.
Yeah, right. Well, I never played, but right? Although I mean, I might have played.
I didn't know who I was then.
And
still don't.
So she's coaching now.
Exactly.
She's got. Let's have a football game. This is exciting. And coming from her, she brings so much to the field, so to speak. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Sarah, and I am 61 years old. I've been dreaming that I am pregnant, even though I have not had any intimate connections in the last 12 months. Also, it has never been my desire to have children, and I certainly don't want to have a child now. So I would like to know what you feel my dream is telling me.
Dearest Sarah, dreams about pregnancy at 61 are far more symbolic than literal, especially if there's been no recent intimacy. The unconscious mind uses powerful biological imagery to communicate emotional or spiritual shifts. I intuit that unconsciously you are ready to create a major shift in your life. Pregnancy in dreams often symbolizes something growing inside you, not a baby, but possibly a new identity, a creative project, a relationship shift, a spiritual awakening, or it might be a long-buried dream resurfacing. At 61, many women enter a profound second spring, a stage of life where something deeply authentic wants to be born. It may be creative energy seeking expression. Pregnancy dreams frequently show up when someone is preparing for a major life shift. The psyche says that you are gestating something, and please know that the dream often comes before the conscious plan. Pregnancy dreams can symbolize rebirth of self. The dream may be asking, who are you becoming now? Sarah, you have spent decades nurturing others, family, partners, clients, friends, so the message could be that it is now time for you to nurture yourself. Sometimes pregnancy dreams at this stage of life mean your life is not done creating. There is still vitality, still potential, and that can be incredibly powerful. It could be a good idea for you to write down some questions and answer them quickly. You could ask yourself, what is new in my life right now? What feels like it is forming but not yet visible? Am I holding on to an idea that feels fragile? Is there something I'm afraid to share yet? And Sarah, I trust that once you ask and answer these questions, that you will become much clearer about your dream. I would love to hear your new thoughts once you have answered your questions.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And for our performance segment, we have violinist and principal violist with the New Mexico Philharmonic. Welcome, Laura Chang, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, Filippo. Thanks so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure to have you. And I was thinking about you and what you're going to share throughout the monologue and throughout the guest segment as well with our interview guest, because not a lot of people recognize the fact that in music, we experience a lot of these things in very different ways, but that we've talked about, right?
Exactly. And, you know, Coach Mickey, I admire you so much. Thank you for coming on the show today. I have so much to learn from you. I feel like as a musician, I am also an athlete. And I definitely at times come from a place of disadvantage. And some of your strategies would be really helpful for me as a musician.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I was going to go straight there in the sense that at one point you were, I think, originally a violinist, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And then you switched to viola. Now you do both. I should probably tell people she's a principal violist with the New Mexico Philharmonic. She's also a first violinist in the Santa Fe Symphony, et cetera, et cetera. So you do play both. But the switching, that was a process. Or what happened there to make that happen?
Well, to be fair, I did play a little bit of viola when I was a teenager. But it was not my goal to be a viola performer as an adult. I really did stick to the violin. But I became a violist by accident when I had an accident. I actually was diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder. It's called rheumatoid arthritis when I was in my early 30s. And it took a number of years to become managed. And in that time, I experienced a little bit of tendon damage that I did not know I had. And one day, I took my kids to an amusement park, was enjoying myself on a special roller coaster called a mountain coaster that you actually control yourself with handbrakes. And I had my son in my lap, and we were going down a steep incline, and the car in front of us came to a very abrupt stop. I stopped too. I felt a pop, and it actually turned out that I tore a tendon in my index finger, pretty much the most important finger that we use as a string player. It's the strongest one. And for many months after that, I was unable to play the violin, and I really didn't know what was next for me professionally as a performer. And I let it heal for a while and was very frustrated. Things weren't moving as I would have liked. And so I took my viola out to see if perhaps the larger size maybe would be more conducive to me being able to reach around the instrument. It was the tightness and the smallness of the violin that was making it difficult. So I took the viola out, played a couple notes, realized it didn't hurt, and realized that it was possible. And in that process, it wasn't instantaneous. I realized, okay, I'm not happy doing anything else. I still want to perform. Is this a possibility? So I pivoted. I moved over to viola. I really took it to another level and got lessons, just like somebody who had never played before, even though it's an instrument that translates quite well to somebody who has also played violin, and started to take professional auditions.
Wow. So talk about life's decisions and life's moments and those downtimes and all of that, right?
Oh, what a whirlwind. It was frightening. I was in Denver at the time. I had a husband and two small kids, and we really were reliant on my income at that time.
Oh, wow.
And I, at the time, did think that I was not going to be able to perform full-time any longer, even if I did move to the viola. So I took a two-pronged approach, and I took the audition at the New Mexico Phil and ended up winning that. And I am the principal, which means that I am the leader of my section of players. There are nine of us. And I'm in charge of kind of leading us as a section and making sure that we play together. I also went back to school and started studying to become an expert in medical coding and billing, which was totally different, obviously, but I had originally planned to be a doctor earlier in life, so I did have some coursework to support that. And I went back to school, got that certification, started working in a local hospital, and I quickly realized that that was not where I wanted to be. And so as time went by, I did try to go back full-time to playing, and luckily I was able to as the tendon healed.
Wow. What a story. And to imagine, like, again, life challenges and the mental processes that go on for somebody of your caliber to have to consider, and what am I supposed to do with my life, and how am I supposed to make money? And of all things, I mean, there are people that have accidents and break a leg or a toe. You break the one finger that is the most important one,
right,
for your profession. Like, what's that about? In all of this, you mentioned, of course, the viola and the violin, and people don't necessarily know that there's a difference. So before we get to hear the viola, and I studied a little bit the violin when I was a kid, but I got to know the viola thanks to a mutual friend of ours who introduced us to you, Peter Yandua Hudson, to whom I am very grateful.
As am I.
And so we're grateful that he introduced you to us and that we're going to get to hear you live. But before we do, tell us, what is the main difference between a violin and a viola?
It's all about size. It always is.
That's it.
So the viola is actually a larger instrument, and it does not have the top string that a violin does, which is the E string. Instead, we have an additional five notes in the bottom range. So we sound lower. We sound like an alto singer or maybe a tenor voice. And we actually read in a different musical clef than most people do. It's called the alto clef. So it's a different musical language.
Yes. Is that, it's one that I can't read, by the way, in any event. And it's got a funny looking key signature, but it sounds so beautiful. It's rich. It's very rich. And being a baritone singer and an alto instrument, I feel very connected to the sound.
As do I. Obviously, I do not have a baritone voice, but I really do love that lower register especially, which you'll get to hear.
So what are we going to hear first, actually? You're going to play live, first of all. How exciting.
I am, and I will be playing one of my favorite pieces. You might recognize it as a piece that has been performed by many, many cellists over the years. I've actually never performed it because it is so popular as a cello piece. It is the prelude from Bach's first cello suite.
So the prelude from Bach's first cello piece we are going to hear today as a prelude, as if it were Bach's viola piece, right?
Yes, yes, for the first time. It has been recorded a number of times by wonderful artists. It's just not heard very often live because people do think of it as a cello piece initially. Well, so I'm gonna try with my viola to make it ring just as much as it would on a cello.
Here it is. We have Laura Chang performing live here on the Life Changes Show. Thank you, Laura. That is so special. Thank you so much. So Laura can be found on our website at Laura Tate Chang. Tate is T-A-I-T Chang, C-H-A-N-G.com, LauraTateChang.com. Laura, I just realized earlier today that adding an E to your last name makes change.
It does.
That's kind of important. You're on the Life Changes Show. I mentioned how we talked about the Philharmonic and we talked about the symphony. Of course, there's the Santa Fe Opera. But one of the things that I loved hearing is that you're so busy performing live music throughout, including neighboring states and even further away. But you're part of a group called Chatter and you're part of the Taos Chamber Music Group. So what is there a resurgence of live music or is this just you?
You know, I don't think that there is a resurgence. I think that this music has always been here. We are really lucky in Albuquerque, where I am, to have all of these live performing groups and all of these different versions of classical music. The music you were referring to is smaller groups, I would say 8 people and fewer. And that is what I love performing the most, for sure, because it's just so fun being in a small group. It's like a conversation.
Yeah, each person is such a big part of it.
Yes, that too. I get to shine a little bit more that way.
So we heard about the moment when you weren't sure how or if music was going to be a part of your life, at least playing it live. When was the moment you originally knew that you wanted it to be a part of your life?
That came to me late as well. I did come from a family of classical musicians, so I saw being a musician as the norm. And while I was growing up, I fought against that and wanted to be different. I wanted to do my own thing. And until I was at college, my plan was actually to be a doctor, a neurologist, to be more specific. And it wasn't until I was at school for both music and for neuroscience that I realized that I just couldn't let the music go. It was becoming a larger and larger part of my life instead. And after I graduated, I did decide to pursue a career in music.
I take it that there's a lot of special music in your life. But
yes, quite a lot.
And you're drawn to all kinds of music, actually, even with a classically known instruments as a viola and a violin, right?
Yes.
So, what else?
Gosh, I really like music that pushes the envelope a little bit. That being said, the Bach that I just played and all of Bach's music that violists have adapted is my favorite. But there are so many pieces by newer composers that look at viola in a different light, look at us as soloists, and let us do some things that we call extended techniques that might sound a little bit strange, but really give a new life to the instrument.
Is there a particular piece that is personal to you?
Oh, gosh. Wow. Newer music, I think I couldn't say one piece just because there are just so many different composers out there that I really, really love. The older music, my favorite composer really, truly is Bach. His keyboard music, his music for cello, his music for violin, his music for cello that violists play, it's wonderful in that it really allows our instrument to shine and to ring without working too hard. But it also lets us show off and show that we can play this tough solo repertoire.
And so this, before we hear this next piece that you're going to play for us, there is, in your opinion, life after digital and AI for musicians and classical music and real instruments?
I think so, yes. I love playing on your show. I'm having such a fun time. Let me preface by saying that. But when you're in a community of other people, all watching a performer, and there's a quiet moment you're thinking of in your favorite piece, you experience that all together. You get goosebumps all together. Where else is that going to happen? You know, it's just a community experience that, other than maybe going to the movies, I can't think of another place where we can have that feeling.
And even the movies isn't live. Maybe a theatrical performance.
A theatrical experience. Yeah. And you know, when you go see live performance, you will never see that same performance again. It's special for its little blips. It's special for its goosebump moments, and it's special for the audience in its state of that day.
You know, I was thinking about this during the conversation also with our guest, Mickey St. Germain, when, and now it's relevant here too in what you just said. I recently saw a clip somewhere that it talked about an experiment that was done where somebody was doing something 100% right and then accidentally spilled their coffee. Then they showed another video of the another person doing the same thing 100% right. And at the end, the audience, however it was, well, I don't know what they were testing for, but the majority of them chose the one who had accidentally spilt the coffee. Even though they were both perfect at whatever they were doing, the
right.
first one had a human moment and everybody could mm-hmm. relate.
Yes.
And sometimes those blips, as you say, that happen in live performances or on the football field or where, like, it draws us in.
It does. It makes it real. And it makes us human. But it also makes the good movements and the good moments even better.
Even better. Okay. Well, we've been having a great moment throughout this whole episode. And we're about to have another one. We're going to get to hear what now?
So the first piece you heard was the prelude from Bach's first suite. He wrote 6 suites. And now I'm actually going to play another prelude. And you would think, oh, well, it's going to sound exactly the same. It's all flowing, running notes. And I feel like it's such a different character that even though it's composed in a very similar fashion, you will hear different things.
Which prelude is this now? The 6th one?
This is the suite number 3 prelude.
Okay, this suite number 3. I'll tell you what I'm thinking. So when you said you were going to play a Bach piece and then afterwards a virtuosic piece, I thought, oh, she chose to do the virtuosic one first. But no?
I would say this one is a little bit more virtuosic than the last one.
Okay.
Maybe just a little bit, in a little bit grander way, shall we say.
Okay, well, we trust you and we're excited. Here is Laura Chang performing live on the Life Changes Show, a Bach prelude, suite number 3 on the viola. Thank you. am applauding you. Thank you so much. That was so fun.
Woo! Thank you for having me. Never had such a workout on a radio show before.
Well, we were excited to hear that you wanted to play live, and we have been delighted. So thank you so much, Laura. Again,
it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Felipe.
Our pleasure. Laura can be found on her website at Laura Tate Chang, T-A-I-T, Tate, and C-H-A-N-G, Chang, LauraTateChang.com. And she's on the socials, and we have a link to a couple other things on the Life Changes Show page for Laura. Laura, thank you again. As a big thank you to Laura Chang, and another big thank you to Coach Mickey St. Germain. And with that, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I, along with our whole family here at the Life Changes Show, I, as your host, Filippo Voltaggio, we say thank you for being with us. And as your life has changed, as ours surely has today, wait, I messed that up. Life special moments. Okay, so as your life changes, like ours surely has today, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.